hopefully we can work with the unions who are affected and see if we can get an agreement.
To refresh our viewers and listeners along the way, your proposal involves consideration. Employees have to get something in return for the choices they make.
The Supreme Court has said that you can't just take people's pension benefits away. They have a constitutional right to them. So the only way to do it would be to have them enter into a contract where they give up something only if they get something. And so that's the basis for our proposal.
Will this get union support in the Democratic caucuses?
Well, I was able to get union support for an earlier version of this. We would even modify that even more dramatically by not affecting any retirees. So it's something we're going to talk to our caucus about. It's not going to be easy. It has to be bipartisan. But there's also, I'm sure, members of our caucus will want to know what else is going to happen, and it might be difficult to look upon it just in an isolated way. But we'll find out.
It was interesting. Also, he wants to work with you on education funding reform, which was a key message you talked about to the City Club of Chicago earlier this week.
Yes.
How much do you read into that?
Well, we in the Senate have passed a version of a school formula change a few years ago, and we really want to push this. This is something which is not just for Chicago. In fact, it eliminates some special benefits that Chicago is getting now. It would be one formula for the whole state. It would be driving money to the areas where there's a concentration of poverty. And that's something which we really have to do. We're worse than the nation in that regard. If we do that, there's a number of winners. The thing that the governor said today, because he's going to work on that, as long as there's no losers. And that's something that we can also work on. It's going to require more money, but that's something that can be worked on.
And that sounded like that came directly from your remarks the other day.
I'm glad he noted them.
But at this point, that's still a tough sell with the Republican caucus as well, because they're concerned that some of their school districts that have done well over the years will not do as well under this formula.
Yes. If you wanted to just look at it from winners and losers, there's winners and losers every year with the current formula. Chicago, for example, lost $60 million this year. They're going to lose another 40 next year if we don't change the formula. There's a great number of Republican Senate districts, I know, that would be winners under a change, because there's a whole bunch of downstate school districts that are really hurting. So this is going to be a bipartisan effort. This is going to be something which is going to be good for all of the school districts. And I understand what the governor's saying about having no losers. We can work on that.
As he stressed bipartisanship agreement on a number of the big issues, of course, he also stuck to his guns on issues like workers' compensation, term limits, redistricting, those things which have not been greeted overwhelmingly with open arms in your caucus.
Right. Nor in the Republican caucus, by the way, if you talk to them privately. So we're going to have to see. We've always offered to sit down and work with the governor on workers' comp reforms. When we say collective bargaining, we've made changes to collective bargaining with the agreement of the unions. And so that's something that we can work on, where the unions come to the table and they agree to those changes. There's no reason why we have to unilaterally try to put them out of business, which is some of the more radical, dramatic changes that the governor's proposed.
At the same time, of course, last week, the governor and his Republican leadership also called for basically allowing the Chicago public school system, which is financially troubled, to go into bankruptcy and have a statewide oversight.
That was insulting. It seemed to be mean-spirited, designed to adversely affect the ability of Chicago to go to the bond market. It's not going to happen. There are 200 school districts that are worse off than Chicago. So, and the idea that the state, which hasn't even been able to pass a budget, is going to be in charge of running the school district is absurd. The problem with Chicago had been that they had not been receiving support for their pensions. They're the only school district in the state that has not received that support. If that hadn't been the case, we would never have been in this bad financial situation in Chicago. There's no need for bankruptcy. There's just need for fairness in the way we fund our schools.
So what are you willing to ask the Chicago Teachers Union to put on the table?
We're not asking the Chicago Teachers Union to do anything. They're negotiating a contract with the city. What we're responsible for is to provide funds for the school district in a fair way, and that's what we should do.
Now, of course, next month he's going to give his budget address, and we should know a little more detail about what he plans to do for the rest of this fiscal year and the fiscal year 2017. We're almost 8 months into 2016 without a budget. 90% of the budget's already being spent with court orders and consent decrees.
He never has proposed a balanced budget. He didn't propose it last year when he gave his balanced budget address, which was only off by $6.2 billion. We passed a budget. He vetoed it. It's not that we didn't have a budget. We passed one. He vetoed it. And so he then is now not even coming back with a proposal. So for this year, much less next year.
So here we are, though. You've got Chicago State University may not be able to make payroll come March 1st. You have Western and Eastern Illinois universities talking about potentially laying off faculty, staff.
All because he vetoed the budget. All because he's not willing to sit down and talk about the gap between the expenditures and the income. We're willing to do that. He's the governor. He acts as if we're in charge of the budget. He's just the governor. He's got to change that.
He did say today, though, that he recognizes that you're a co-equal form of government, a co-equal branch of government. The same thing, of course, applies, though. We just had Lutheran Social Services of Illinois lay off, 750 people?
Not because we didn't pass a budget to appropriate that money. He's the one that vetoed it and hasn't come back with a proposal for a balanced budget. We have a co-equal branch. We also have a supermajority of Democrats. You can't suggest Democrats to be voting like radical Republicans in the legislature. It's not going to happen.
How long can you keep marrying, though, this turnaround agenda to the need for revenue? And how long can this continue?
It's not just revenue. Look, we are $6.5 billion short for next year. We can do it by cuts or revenue or a combination thereof. We're willing to work with the governor because we can't do it on our own. If we're going to have any tax increase, it's only because Bruce Rauner wants a tax increase. And the amount will be determined by Bruce Rauner because we can't do it by ourselves. And we will help him do that, of course, as long as the rest of the Republicans in the General Assembly want to help.
You've been criticized, though, and your Democratic counterpart here in the House for not having a Democratic alternative to this.
We don't have enough votes to override a veto of a tax increase. Therefore, we know that. That's why we haven't proposed one. We're waiting to see what Governor Rauner wants to propose. He's got a $6.5 billion deficit for next year, a $5.5 billion deficit for this year, which has not been closed. He hasn't given us any proposals.
Did he effectively dial back some of the rhetoric today to get everyone back to the table and have constructive dialogue?
I don't know about the budget. I heard a bunch of statistics that I think we're going to have to be fact-checking for a long time. And the ideas about working on school reform and pensions is great, but we have to pass a budget. And I think we have to hear a little bit more about what his proposal is, on what he wants to do with this budget, how he wants to close the gap.
President Cullerton, thanks very much. Always a pleasure having you on Illinois Lawmakers. We certainly appreciate your time. Up next on Illinois Lawmakers, we'll hear from the Senate Republican leader, Christine Redonio.
More people employed at high pay, we need to stop crushing employers. To create good jobs, we need more job creators. Now, I understand that union leaders and trial lawyers are putting pressure on you to keep the status quo. But if we don't offer a competitive environment for businesses, pretty soon the unions won't have any more jobs to unionize, and the trial lawyers won't have any more businesses to sue. All I'm asking for is a return to balance in this state. Because we don't have it now, we don't have competitive balance, and jobs are leaving. To bring good jobs to Illinois, we have to make Illinois a place where it's good to do business. We must fix our workers' comp system, labor regulations, liability costs, and property taxes that make us uncompetitive, and push job creators out.
Republican reaction now to the governor's State of the State message from Senate Republican leader Christine Redonio of Lamont. Good to have you on the program again.
Well, thanks for having me.
The tone of this speech was quite a bit different than the partisan rhetoric we've heard around the Capitol and the city of Chicago the last few days. Your thoughts and your takeaway from today?
Well, I absolutely agree with that. I think there was very definitely a conciliatory tone, an attempt to offer some real concrete proposals, and a focus on things that I think we generally agree we need to move forward on, things like pension reform, like school funding, certainly this information technology project. There is a lot of common ground here. And this criminal justice reform, too, is another important one.
I think that, procurement reform, some aspects of the education reform. Mm-hmm. He talked very, I was mentioning this to the Senate president just before you came on, some of the language that he used talking about education reform sounded almost to mirror what the Senate president told the City Club earlier in the week.
Yeah, well, I think there's no disagreement that we need to revisit the formula. We need to make it as fair as possible, but it's an extraordinarily complex formula, and so it needs to be done carefully. I certainly am willing to invest the time and energy, as are our members, but it needs to be a collaborative process, and I believe it needs to be led by the governor.
The earlier versions of that were distinctly bipartisan products. A member of your own Senate leadership team, Dave Lechtefeld, who has a long track record with K-12 education of his own, was a part
sure.
of that. But concerns arose about how this might take money away from suburban schools. And
well,
some of the Republicans backed away from
sure.
it.
Sure. Well, one of the original bills introduced by the Senate Democrats not only took money away, but took vast amounts away. So you can't have a situation where in helping one group, you cut the knees off another. I definitely think there's room to do a better, more equitable job. But again, it's a team effort, and we need to be careful about unintended consequences. It needs to be done carefully.
There was no inflammatory, very little in the way of incendiary language today,
right.
but it was very clear. The governor is not backing away
right.
from the key elements of what he considers his turnaround agenda to
right.
be, namely workers' compensation reform, term limits, redistricting, a number of things along those lines. A lot of those are non-starters with the Democratic caucuses here in the Capitol.
Well, which is very unfortunate because I think the governor and many members of my caucus and the general public truly believe that Illinois is off on the wrong track. And some of those items, term limits, the redistricting, are the very kinds of things that will prevent us in the future from getting locked into a system that benefits, while a substantial number, certainly not the majority of the folks in Illinois.
As you look at the turnaround agenda, that's been the main thing that the governor said, I have to have that before I consider any raising taxes. And in the meantime, we just saw Lutheran Social Services drastically cut programming and personnel last week. We also hear the same may happen with Catholic Charities. A lot of the smaller social safety net agencies that people depend on are gone and possibly never coming back. Is the cost of pushing this agenda worth it in the long run?
Well, I believe it is, because the fact of the matter is we were on a path to many of those agencies having to make cutbacks and close anyway. And if we simply capitulate to what the Democrats want, and that is no change in the status quo, just raise taxes to fund it, we'll be right back where we were. And I want to point out, too, with many of the very small agencies that have closed, many of those services have been absorbed by stronger and healthier agencies. That can't go on forever, and that's a consideration, and I would truly urge our Democratic friends to engage in a discussion to get that funding going again.
What about higher education, though? As we've been watching in recent weeks, Chicago State University says it may not be able to make payroll come March 1st. Other universities are talking about laying off faculty, all sorts of things that are very difficult in this situation.
Sure.
125,000 students don't have MAP grants to continue their education.
Well, most of the state universities and most of the community colleges are in fact honoring MAP grants through the next semester, so we do have a bit of time there. I think there's a general consensus that within higher ed there are many, many savings and efficiencies that could be had, and you see some of that going on now that they know those appropriations have slowed down. That's not to say we don't need to get back to funding them, but I think at this point there is some good coming out of it. We've seen the University of Illinois freeze tuition and lay off administrators.
There's a discussion in the House as we talk today about introducing legislation. I'm going to talk to Leader Durkin about this in a little bit, but they're talking about giving the governor some financial latitude within the budget that he has control over to bring university funding back up to 80% of what it was previously, along with funding those MAP grants. Do you think that is going to get anywhere here?
Well, I think that that's a good concept, and I think that given the inability to have a budget, the governor needs some flexibility to manage state government. However, I believe that some of the university funding is tied to the concept that the Democrats would give him some more ability to manage state government, and that is critical.
One area where many of the universities would probably find some relief in what the governor said has to do with procurement reform, which is a major cost to them.
Right, and that is certainly another area that if we could pass that, some of the cuts that are being proposed would be far less impactful. And that's something, again, I think there will be bipartisan support for. We kind of went, overboard, partly in response to the Blagojevich era. We now need to reintroduce some common sense into that.
One idea that's not going anywhere, if you heard Senator Cullerton a little bit earlier, is a takeover of the Chicago public school system by the state of Illinois, allowing it to go into some form of receivership and restructuring.
Well, number one, I'm sorry to hear him say that he's not willing to look at that as an option. But we already have a law in Illinois that allows the State Board of Education to appoint an authority. It's not the state, it's an authority that runs the school board to get them back to financial health. It has been successful in some cases, so I'm sorry he's unwilling to consider that. The bankruptcy portion, I don't know if that's been introduced yet, but that would certainly be a very last resort. But we need to take a look at alternatives.
There is agreement, it appears, finally on the question of pension reform. It looks like everyone today is on the same page. They're still working things out. Will this get Republican support if it moves forward with the blessing of the governor and the Senate?
Well, certainly it's a much more modest proposal, but I think that's what the courts have told us is what we can expect. We certainly look forward to working with the Senate president to support something that hopefully can pass constitutional muster and save the state $1 billion a year.
It looks like in the long run, whatever comes about in the next few weeks here, the governor, of course, said with respect to the idea of getting a budget agreement, he said it's still possible. Historic budget agreement could be reached here in the next few weeks. But they're still far apart in terms of spending plans, where cuts come, where revenue comes into play.
Well, you're right about that. We haven't really even talked about the cuts that will need to be made. We're talking about more fundamental changes. That will be a very difficult discussion when we have it.
Senator Redonio, thanks very much for your time. We certainly appreciate your time on Illinois Lawmakers.
Thank you.
Up next on the program, a conversation with Illinois House Speaker Mike Madigan.
Citizens don't trust their government, and businesses don't either. We pay for this trust deficit in lost economic growth. Victims of a widely held perception that everything in Illinois is lobbyist tested, special interest approved. We need to regain public trust. We need to restore employer confidence that Illinois is a safe place to do business, so they will invest more here, grow in more high paying jobs, and expanding our tax base. That starts with fundamental changes, term limits, and redistricting reform. The people of Illinois deserve the chance to vote on term limits. The state Supreme Court made it clear that it takes legislative action to put term limits on the ballot. This is the year to make that happen.
We're now joined on Illinois Lawmakers by Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan of Chicago. Good to have you on the program, sir.
Good to be with you.
Today was an interesting exercise in rhetoric, considering some of the brickbats that have been hurled here in the past few weeks between the governor's office and your office. This was a more cordial, more statesmanlike speech. Your takeaway?
Well, I listened to the speech with great interest. I found it particularly interesting where the governor was claiming successes because there was cooperation. And there's four areas where I strongly agree with his view that there were accomplishments because there was a cooperation across the board. As an example, the governor claimed a record high level of support for elementary and secondary education. That did happen. The governor talked in terms of the correction to the FY15 budget. That did happen. He talked in terms of landmark public safety legislation. That did happen. He talked in terms of changes to the unemployment insurance system. That happened also. My point would be that in these four areas where the Illinois government was able to show real good accomplishments, at no time during the consideration of those four areas did the governor attempt to advance his program to bring down the wages and the standard of living of middle-class families and to send injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room. So a key element in the success in these programs was the absence of the current advocacy of the governor's program, which will bring down wages and the standard of living for middle-class families and send injured workers to welfare and to the emergency room.
He did, under no circumstances today, back away from the turnaround agenda, which is workers' compensation reform, legislative redistricting reform, term limits for lawmakers and leaders, and those are still on the table and those are must-haves for him.
And the governor has been consistent in that regard, but that ignores the number one problem facing the state of Illinois, which is the current deficit, along with structural deficits carried forward over many years, the loans that the governor took on interfund borrowing, which have to be repaid at the end of this fiscal year. They amount to over $400 million. So that when anybody who studies Illinois government complains about the status, the condition of the government of the state of Illinois, what they're really talking about is the fiscal condition of the state. And I've said consistently, that's the number one problem facing the government of the state of Illinois. I think we ought to address that problem. We have done three budget makings since the governor came into office. Three times we sat with the governor on a professional and a cordial basis, came to an agreement on budget-making bills. At no time did the governor attempt to advance changes in wages and standard of living for middle-class families or sending injured workers to welfare or to the emergency room. The evidence is on the table. The evidence is very clear. We can come to a resolution of our problems if we're reasonable in terms of identifying what the real critical problems are, proceeding to solve those problems. They relate to Illinois budget making. The governor would say we should cut spending. We agree. The legislature passed Senate Bill 788, which would have cut the Medicaid program by $400 million. I've said consistently, in order to solve the budget problem of the state of Illinois, we need to do two things. Number one, cut the spending. Number two, raise taxes on the wealthy Illinoisans.
There was a comment earlier in one of your speeches where you had talked about possibly raising the income tax as a starting point of discussion, back another point or going back to 5%. In your view, what is the appropriate amount?
Well, what you're referring to was really a media creation. I've said consistently that we need to cut spending and balance the budget, and in terms of new revenue, I'm prepared to negotiate with the governor. But I will say that in terms of new revenue, I firmly believe that we should raise taxes on the wealthy.
That's the millionaire's tax that you were trying to propose.
But there can be other increased taxes on the wealthy.
If you were to go back a few years to your dealings with Governor Jim Edgar, you two didn't get along, or didn't see eye to eye at first, but eventually you reached an understanding. And Governor Edgar has advised this governor to try to pick one thing at a time and try to achieve that kind of agenda, one piece at a time. Would it be possible on an area like workers' compensation reform, for example, to achieve some meaningful changes there, and then move ahead with the budget?
Yeah. I think that's an excellent question, and I think everybody should understand that the House has passed a bill which does changes in collective bargaining, workers' compensation, along with a section of the bill which would provide for rate regulation on the insurance companies that sell workers' compensation in Illinois. There are clear studies, generally acknowledged and accepted, that the cost of workers' compensation in Illinois has come down since 2011, but the rates charged by the insurance companies have not come down. If we would follow the example of a majority of the states in America, we would subject rate regulation on these insurance companies that sell workers' compensation.
How do you enforce that?
You pass a bill and the governor signs the bill and you go to a rate regulation system, which other states do.
What about causation?
Causation is an example of why we can't come together. It's an example where the governor wants members of the legislature to abandon core beliefs in terms of treatment of fellow Illinoisans. Causation says that if you've used your body for, say, 30 years to earn a living, you're close to age 60, you've suffered a debilitating injury, you won't be able to go back to that job, the benefit level is going to come down dramatically.
But doesn't it also allow you to blow out your knee playing touch football over the weekend and come back on Monday morning and claim workers' comp?
That's fraud. There ought not to be fraud in the system. There's mechanisms in place to stop fraud. If we should do more to stop fraud, we ought to.
The governor stressed a couple of points where there is agreement, particularly with your colleague in the Senate, Senator Cullerton, the Senate president, on pension reform, revisiting an earlier version of pension reform.
Right. Now, you'll recall I spent 4 to 5 years fighting against labor unions in order to enact Senate Bill 1, which was a pension reform bill. Unfortunately, the Illinois Supreme Court disagreed with us. I'm anxious to see the governor's language that he proposes to add to the colors and idea in the Senate. I don't know that anybody's seen the language. I'd like to see it also.
If it involves many of the key principles that were in the original version of Senator Cullerton's bill, which is consideration between future raises and future continuing cost of living increases, is there something there that you could go with? It doesn't save as much as your original idea, only about $1 billion a year.
I have a completely open mind on pension reform. You'll recall I fought to accomplish it over several years.
Is there support for it in the Democratic House caucus, given that labor unions won a significant victory with finding that earlier bill unconstitutional, Speaker?
On future attempts to change the pension laws, I think a good place to begin would be the opinion of the Illinois Supreme Court. I'd recommend that every Illinoisan read it. It was a very well-drafted opinion. I didn't agree with the opinion, but it was very well-drafted. It's easy to understand, and it's a real good starting point for consideration of changes in the pension statute.
It makes pretty clear that diminishment of future earnings, once you're vested in the system, just is not a starting point.
That's my view of the opinion. My attorney tells me that's her view of the opinion. Mm-hmm. That's why I would recommend to anyone, that's a good starting point.
What about school funding reform? The governor pointed to that. He used some of the same language that John Cullerton used before the City Club earlier this week.
I think it's a real good idea. And interestingly, in the House, on a bipartisan basis, we've been studying that question over several months. The majority leader, Barbara Curry, is the chair of a bipartisan group, Democrats and Republicans. We're going to reactivate that group very shortly. The charge to the group will be study the current distribution of school money to school districts all over the state, determine where there are insufficiencies, inadequacies, and let's move on a bipartisan basis to change the formula so that we do a better job of supporting the education of the children in the state.
And a state takeover of the Chicago public school system, a non-starter with you?
Well, I'm interested to see the language of the governor's proposal. I know they filed a bill. It's interesting that the governor would be supporting a bailout of the Chicago school system. I find that interesting. That's why I'm anxious to get the bill read the bill, have my staff analyze the bill. But I just find it very interesting that Governor Rauner is actually supporting a bailout of the Chicago schools.
Yes or no, will there be any sort of fiscal year 16 budget before 17 takes effect?
Apparently the governor chose not to address that question in today's speech. I found that very interesting. It is a matter of concern to everyone in the legislature and to many Illinoisans, and I was just surprised that the governor didn't deal with the absence of a state budget.
Do Democrats bear a level of responsibility for what's happening to the state social services network too?
Well, as you probably know, and I'd be happy to give you the evidence, that was part of Governor Rauner's plan 3 to 4 years ago. I can give you the document. It's a direct quote from Governor Rauner. He deliberately planned to shortchange the social service agencies of the state, as his words, to drive a wedge into the Democratic Party.
Has he done so?
It doesn't appear that he has.
Speaker Madigan, thank you for
your
time.
Good to be with you.
Yes, sir.
Sure.
Good to be with you
as well. Enjoy your time in the Capitol.
I always do. Up next on the program, we'll be talking to House Republican Leader Jim Durkin on Illinois lawmakers.
Change is hard. Reform is difficult. But we can't just raise taxes again. We know that doesn't work. While the 2011 tax hike was in place, our credit rating was downgraded 5 times. We barely made a dent in our bill backlog. State support for schools was cut. Our unfunded pension liabilities went up $28 billion, and our economic growth fell to half the national average. Raising taxes without improving our ability to compete will not help the people of Illinois, and in fact, it will make things worse. While all of us are continuing to negotiate over reforms to grow jobs and lower our taxes, our administration is not waiting to take action. We are moving ahead to make government more effective and provide our taxpayers with major long-term savings. Let's review some of our
continuing reaction from legislative leaders here in Springfield on Illinois lawmakers on Illinois Public Television and Illinois Public Radio. House Republican Leader Jim Durkin of Western Springs almost elevated you to the august chamber there. Sorry about that.
No, I'm not sure if I want any part of that. I like where I'm at.
Today, as we've been talking over the last few minutes, the governor had, I think most would agree, a very statesmanlike speech, a vision statement for transforming Illinois government in a lot of different areas, from education to spending reform, you name it, his vision for a transformative vision for the state of Illinois.
I agree, and I think that if anybody questioned the governor's resolve about fixing Illinois and doing everything he can and working with the legislature, I think that they found out today. I thought it was a very powerful speech. He talked about the areas where there may be some disagreement, but some areas that we should agree on, and I compliment him for taking up the tough issues about pension reform, embracing the Senate President's plan for pension reform. I congratulate the governor for also embracing Senator Cullerton, the president of the Senate, his plan for changing the way education is funded in Illinois, with a greater emphasis on improving low poverty, the poverty districts, and also the rural districts, and how they are fit into the current funding formula. Not easy subjects, and a lot of Republicans don't like to talk about that. But I give them credit for it, because that's a very important issue for, I would say, most part, probably the Democrats on the other side of the aisle.
That was a very interesting one for him to address, and as we pointed out earlier, almost identical to some of the language that Senator Cullerton used to frame that discussion earlier in the week before the City Club.
Well, it's been an interesting few weeks.
Oh, yeah.
But I think, you know what, we took a few weeks off. Let's get back to work. But I think that, you know, we've had a long summer. I can tell you that personally, but I think that there now is a time for us to come together and work on many of the issues which the governor stated, that I know that there is a consensus, at least in us, to find some type of resolve. I've made a commitment to both the Speaker and the President and the Senate in our meetings that I will work in good faith with them to change the way in which we fund education in Illinois. It's a very daunting task, something that has been kicked around for over 20 years. But we now have a governor who says, I'm ready to take action, I'm ready to work on it.
A key to that, a key to the success of any of that, would be finding a way that this formula can be changed without harming an individual district.
Well, that is a challenge. And so it has to be, I would imagine that if there's going to be a broader discussion of how it fits into our budget, it may have to be that type of action, because there probably is a revenue component to it. So you want to hold harmless schools, but you also want to lift up the schools that have challenges, ones that just don't have the revenue coming in based on their very weak tax base and also inequalities under the formula.
And it's kind of hard to go back if you remember the history of this, going back to Senate Bill and House Bill 750, where you're talking about doing an income tax increase in exchange for property tax relief, because of the way that these issues have moved since then.
Well, that was my second term in the legislature, and I remember the debate, and I remember that the bill didn't get a timely hearing in the Senate. But at that time, we felt that it was that the trade-off was not sufficient for a suburban legislator, for the property tax rebate they would receive would not be matched up with what they'd be paying in the income tax. At that time, times were different. Our budget was in a little better position. Things have changed considerably since then. So I can say that what's important is that I think most members of the legislature say it's time to fix this problem.
And speaking of problems, of course, we're almost 8 months into the fiscal year 2016. We still don't have a budget for, let's say, the remaining 10% of the state government that's currently going out the door as far as funding for schools and things like that. Higher education still looking for its FY16 appropriation. MAP funding is still not being paid to the students who are 125,000 students who are attending Illinois colleges, low-income students. Then there's the whole issue of the social safety net. We've talked about how Lutheran Services cut dramatically, nearly 50% of their staff. Nearly 5,000 people won't be getting their services. Catholic Charities has issues. They're owed $16 million, and the list goes on. Is it worth it for the kinds of goals that the governor's been, he didn't back away from the turnaround agenda, term limits, redistricting. Is it worth it to have that kind of suffering inflicted on people of both parties?
Well, let me just start and say that if the Democrats wanted strictly a tax increase, revenue, they have the ability to do it and to override the governor based on their supermajorities in both chambers. But I think that there's a smarter and there's a better way of going about this, and that is through a collaborative effort of both chambers and also with the governor to fix the FY16 impasse. I don't want to sound like an open, broken record, but it's real simple.
Give me a roadmap.
I'll give you a roadmap real simple. I mean, it's nothing different that we've heard over the past 6 months. The governor has indicated that he's willing to entertain revenue, a tax increase, something which our Democrat counterparts say that should be the solution with some cuts. But the fact is, the bigger issue and the bigger way that they are seeking to resolve the budget is going to be through a tax increase on Illinoisans with no strings attached. That is what we did 4.5 years ago. I'm not prepared to sell that to my colleagues, but the fact is, we can do it by working with the governor, and this is what you do in negotiation. Everybody gives a little bit. The governor has gone so far out as a Republican, his first term, to say that, look, I'm willing to accommodate you on your major priority, that's revenue. Where are you coming to accommodate me and the Republicans on what he believes is important for Illinois? Those are part of his reforms.
He's backed away from the open shop idea around the state of Illinois, but nothing else much, really, as far as what's in that turnaround agenda that Speaker Madigan calls anti-middle class because of what it would do to working
people. I don't
think
the middle class has been treated too well over the past 20 years, and I could spend another few hours talking about that. But I don't subscribe to that attitude. I think that when we fix Illinois, we can help. I mean, the governor made it very clear that the wages of blue-collar workers in Illinois are being outgunned in every other state in the Midwest. We need to change the environment in Illinois because we want to help workers raise their wages, give them a better quality of life. We have to do it not by just saying that we're going to pass a tax increase and make some ceremonial cuts and say that we're going to go home and we're going to fix the FY16 budget. It just doesn't work. And I'm not going to sell it to my caucus either.
Back to higher education for a moment. You're introducing legislation that would allow the governor some flexibility to move funds around within areas of the budget that are already being spent. And contingent upon that, Representative Kay, Representative Hayes, I believe Representative Brady, are talking about a bill that would fund higher education at least 80% for 2016 of what it was for 2015.
That's correct. In all my years down here, one of the criticisms that the Democrat majority has had over Republicans when we challenge them on budget issues is, where is your plan? So what we're doing is that we've offered our plan. The bill that is currently in committee, that's a Senate Bill 2043, I believe is deficient. It addresses only community colleges and MAP grants, but the fact is there's no money to pay for it. So what we are going to do is that we've offered an alternative, and that would be to, which I think is a good bill. We've worked with the college presidents, asking them, where is an acceptable area where you can operate under cuts-wise? So instead, with the monies they receive from the state government. And we've come up with 20%, and that has been a percentage of cuts that the presidents have stated they can live with. We're also going to make some cuts to community colleges, but also allow for MAP grants to be funded up to the levels that the governor indicated earlier in the year, only on the condition that the governor is given flexibility to be able to fix this budget and to help pay for these programs. The same way when Governor Quinn took office shortly after Blagojevich was thrown out, Republicans like myself made a strong case that we're going to give this governor, this new governor, the ability to try to fix some problems under some very, very challenging times. We offered that in good faith. I believe that they should, in this bill, offer this governor good
faith and
be able to fix
this. Kind of a new budget implementation kind of act.
Correct.
So,
exactly.
So to speak.
That's the same concept that we're trying to work for.